Mahabharata, Chapter 48, to Kurukshetra. Early in the morning of Krishna's departure, Karna rose to perform his usual worship of the sun god. Since childhood he had been attracted to the sun god and had never missed his rituals and prayers. An hour before sunrise, he mounted his chariot and went to the Ganges, accompanied by numerous Brahmins. Wearing only a loincloth, he waded into the shallows and faced east, chanting Vedic hymns. On the river bank, the Brahmins lit a sacred fire and made offerings to Surya on his behalf. It was well known that Karna would offer charity to anyone who approached him after his worship. His vow to give anything to any petitioner was famous. Indra had already taken advantage of the vow and divested him of his natural armor. And now Kunti approached him. The first time she saw the youthful Karna enter the arena of Drona's martial exhibition, she knew he was her son. She also knew that he was ignorant of the fact. It was painful to see him rivaling constantly with his brothers. She was mortified at the thought that they would soon try to kill each other in battle. It was time to tell Karna the truth. Perhaps he could be convinced to join his brother's side. Just as the sun rose, Kunti made her way along to the Ganges. As she approached the riverside, she heard Karna reciting prayers aloud. She looked at him as a mother looks at her son. He stood facing the sun, his arms held over his head, and his hands joined together in prayer, a position he would maintain until the sun had risen high into the sky. Kunti sat on the river bank and waited for Karna to finish. It was summer, and the thin silk cloth covering her head provided little protection from the heat. After she had waited for more than 2 hours, Karna finally completed his worship and turned around. He was surprised to see Kunti before him, but he said, "You are most welcome, noble lady. I am Karna, the son of Adirath and Radha. I salute you with all respect. Tell me what I can do for you today." Kunti rose and went toward Karna with faltering steps. He had now stepped from the river and stood dripping. As the Kuru queen approached him, he saw that her beautiful features appeared drawn. Her eyes darted nervously from him to the ground. Clasping her hands together, she softly addressed him. "Oh, my child, you are not the son of Radha and Adirath." Her voice quavered and she paused to gain her composure. "Dear child, you were not born a Suta. Know that you are my son, conceived by the powerful Surya. When you were born, you blazed like your father, and you wore a natural coat of armor and shining earrings. Out of fear for my reputation and my father's, since I was considered a maiden, I cast you away, stricken with grief." Tears flooded Kunti's eyes. It always cut her heart to think of how she had abandoned Karna at birth, but there had been no question of telling anyone about it, even when he arrived at the arena that day. She had been gratified to know that Adirath and his wife had at least cared for her son, and she thought that there would be no need to reveal the truth. And now he was about to die. She had to try to save him. If he did not die, he would kill Arjuna, and Kunti could not bear losing either son. She looked into Karna's wide, unbelieving eyes. "Not knowing of your birth, you have not realized that the Pandavas are actually your brothers. You now serve Duryodhan. This is not proper, my son. You are being led by avarice and deceitful men who have stolen Yudhisthira's kingdom. You will be ruined if you continue to follow them. Instead, follow the virtuous path and join your brothers." Karna pressed his two strong hands to the sides of his head, as if to contain the raging confusion that Kunti's words had created. How could it be true? If she had always known that he was the Pandava's brother, then why had she not said so sooner? Was this just some ploy to discourage him from fighting with the Pandavas? That seemed unlikely. Kunti was famous for her virtue and truth. Her words must be true. As they sank in, Karna felt rooted to the spot where he stood. He was too amazed to speak. Kunti wiped her eyes and glanced up to the sun. Why had that blazing deity put her through such pain? It had been an extremely difficult decision for her to reveal the truth to her firstborn son. She loved Karna, but he would surely find that impossible to accept. Whenever she had contemplated telling him, the fear of his reaction had stopped her. Would he reject her out of hand, just as she had rejected him? Now it no longer mattered. She was willing to risk his rejection and anger, if it meant saving his life. Let the Kurus see you join with Arjuna. When brotherly feelings are established between you, the Kauravas will bow before you in fear and respect. You and Arjuna, united like Balaram and Janardhan, what you will not achieve. O Karna, surrounded by your five brothers, you will shine like Brahma amidst the gods. You are my eldest son. Child, do not call yourself a Suta again. When Kunti had finished, Karna heard a voice coming from the sun. O Karna, Kunti speaks the truth. Follow her advice, for that will be in your best interest. Karna was convinced. He was Kunti's son and Yudhisthira's elder brother. Suddenly it all made sense. Adirath had told him how many years ago he had found him floating in a basket in the Ganges. Adirath said that he had shone like a celestial, and he had thought the gods had sent him a child to fulfill some divine purpose. He had brought the child home and raised him with love. Later, when Karna learned from the sun god that his natural armor was celestial, he had realized that Adirath was probably right. He must have been conceived by some powerful deity. But he had never guessed the truth. Karna's voice rose above the rushing sound of the river. I do not doubt your words, lady, but I cannot respect them. I do not see what virtue would lie in my joining with the Pandavas, nor do I feel that you were virtuous to have abandoned me at birth. By doing so, you have destroyed my fame and renown. I have been labeled a Suta and denied the rights of a Kshatriya, which were rightfully mine. What enemy could possibly have done me greater harm? Karna dropped to his knees, clenching his eyes and fists. He threw his head back toward the sun. Hot tears wetted his face, contorted with grief and anger. He had often wondered about the identity of his real mother, longing one day to meet her. Now here she stood, Kunti, the Kuru queen and mother of his hated enemies, but his own mother nonetheless. Feelings of love welled up in Karna's heart, but he fought to deny them. Even in spite of Surya's words, it was hard to accept that she had his interests in mind. Nor did he like the idea of leaving Duryodhan at his most dire hour of need. Unlike Kunti, the Kaurava prince had shown him real love and friendship from the very beginning. How could he now suddenly abandon him and switch his affections to the Pandavas? Karna's words grew sharper. I cannot accept that you are my well-wisher. You did not show me mercy at the proper time, and have come to me now only to fulfill your own needs. I cannot do as you suggest. If on the eve of battle I leave Duryodhan to join with the Pandavas, then who will not call me a coward? The Kauravas have granted all my desires. They have worshipped me. What kind of man would I be to leave them now? They depend on me as men on the sea depend on their boat. Now I must show my gratitude to Dhritarashtra's sons. Karna remembered his impulsive vow to Bhishma in the Kuru assembly. He felt guilty that he had abandoned Duryodhan even that much. He could not fight until Bhishma was slain. It was prophesied that Sikandi would kill Bhishma. Then Duryodhan would need Karna more than ever. There was no question of leaving him now. I cannot prove untrue to my lord now. I will not abandon him. Yet your appeal will not go in vain. With the exception of Arjuna, I will not kill any of your sons in battle, even if I overpower them. When I kill Arjuna, I will become famous for my prowess. Even if he kills me, I will still earn world renown. Thus you will always have 5 sons, O princess. Either Arjuna or I will survive, but not both." Kunti stepped toward him and held out her arms with tears streaming down her face. Despite himself, Karna felt his powerful arms reach out to envelop Kunti as if of their own accord. As mother and son stood embracing for the first time in their lives, Kunti sorrowfully said, "O child, destiny is most powerful. What you say will surely happen. The Kuruls will be destroyed, and I will lose either you or Arjuna, if not more of my sons. When it is time to hurl weapons, do not forget your promise. May you be blessed, and may all be well with you. I am leaving." Kunti stood back and looked at her firstborn son one last time. Then she hurried back to the city. Karna climbed into his chariot and sat there, unmoving, for some time. Kunti's words repeated themselves in his mind again and again. How different things might have been if she had kept him as her son. But destiny had decreed a different path for him. His fate now lay with Duryodhan and the Kauravas. There was no use lamenting for what might have been. Karna resolved not to reveal to anyone what had transpired between himself and Kunti. It would only confuse the issue and make his own vows impossible to follow. With a troubled heart, he set off toward the city. Before leaving, Krishna asked to speak privately with Karna. As he reached Hastinapur's southern gate around noon, he saw Karna waiting for him. Krishna stopped and asked Karna to mount his chariot with him. He took Karna out of the city, speaking as they rode in the direction of Virata. Krishna considered Karna the most serious threat to the Pandavas in the coming war. Karna's charioteer drove his car behind Krishna with Satyaki, who had dismounted from Krishna's chariot to give him the privacy he desired with Karna. Placing his hand on Karna's shoulder, Krishna said, "According to scripture, the child born of a mother before her marriage becomes her husband's son. You were born before your mother's marriage, Karna. You are therefore Pandu's son. The Pandavas are on your father's side, and the Vrishnis on your mother's. You are related to both these races. O best of men, O hero, come with me and become the king. The Pandavas will worship you as their elder brother, as will I, and all their followers. You will be anointed by the wives and daughters of kings with water from golden pots. At the proper time, Draupadi will approach you as a wife does her husband. Your 5 brothers will follow behind you, even as the gods follow Indra. I too shall follow you, accompanied by the Andakas and the Vrishnis. Rule over this earth, O Karna. Let the bards and chanters sing your praises. Delight Kunti's heart, and take your rightful place at the head of her sons." Karna looked into Krishna's smiling face. Surely he knew everything, as the sages said, but it was difficult to accept his advice. Karna shook his head. "Undoubtedly your words are meant for my good, O Keshava. I know now that I am Pandu's son. Kunti has told me everything. But she abandoned me, and I was raised by Adirath and his wife. They have loved me as parents, and have always seen me as their son. So too I have seen them as my parents. They performed all the necessary rituals in my life. After adopting me, they later had more children, to whom I have become an elder brother. They even selected my wives, and I have conceived sons and daughters with those wives. I cannot break those relationships, even to gain both heaven and earth. Nor, O Madhava, shall I break them out of fear." Karna felt righteous. Following Krishna's advice would mean transgressing proper behavior. He gazed ahead at the rolling countryside as he continued, "For 13 years I have enjoyed sovereignty only due to Duryodhan's favor. I owe him a lot. Depending on me, he has formed an enmity with the Pandavas. I have been chosen to face Arjuna in combat. If I back down now, then I will become infamous. O Keshava, I cannot let myself be labeled as a coward. nor can I prove myself disloyal to Duryodhan. If I were given the world to rule, I would immediately give it to Duryodhan. How could I live with the Pandavas after all that he has done for me?" Karna reflected on his feelings toward the Pandavas. He respected Yudhisthira, Bhima, and even the twins. His hatred for Arjuna owed its origins to the day that he had been refused entry into Drona's school. When he came again to Hastinapur to compete in the exhibition, Drona had not recognized him as the boy he had turned away years earlier. He had told him then that he only accepted royal princes in his school. Karna was a charioteer's son. Burning with shame, he had gone away, vowing vengeance. Defeating Drona's best student, Arjuna, would be the best way to exact that revenge. As soon as he had seen Arjuna in the arena, his heart had filled with envy. That envy had not waned. Soon it would explode in a fight to the death. There was no other course for him now. "O Krishna, I do not hold much hope for our victory, but I shall not change sides now. I know Yudhisthira is virtuous and pure-minded. He will preside over the coming battle sacrifice, in which Dhritarashtra's sons will be the sacrificial animals. The Pandavas are pious men who deserve to rule the earth. The harsh words I spoke to them and their wife previously were only for Duryodhan's pleasure. Remembering them now, I am filled with remorse. Still, I will fight with Arjuna, O Keshava. That is my duty as a moral man and a Kshatriya. It is likely that I will die, because I do not see the Kauravas winning. This dispute will end when Arjuna kills me and Bhima kills Duryodhan. This battle will be so great that it will be remembered as long as the mountains stand. It cannot be stopped." Krishna laughed. "Do you not then desire to rule the earth, O hero? Will you not peaceably accept the kingdom in the way I have indicated? Without doubt the Pandavas' victory will soon follow. When you see the five brothers coming out for battle, know that the terrible Kali age is approaching. Many men will be destroyed. Go back to Hastinapur and tell Drona and Kripa to make ready. It would be the full moon in 7 days. Let the battle begin on that day. The kings under Duryodhan's leadership will soon meet an excellent death at the edge of weapons." Karna could not understand Krishna's purpose. Why was he asking him to defect now? He knew that ultimately it would make little difference to the outcome of the battle. Destiny had, it seemed, already determined everything. Karna looked at Krishna, who sat with his long black hair flowing in the wind. "Why do you confound me, O Keshava? Why would you lead me to folly? You know everything. The destruction of the world is at hand, with Duryodhan, Shakuni, Dushasan, and myself as its root cause. It will be as you say and no other way. O Keshava, we have already seen the omens which portend Duryodhan's defeat. I even saw the Pandavas in a dream coming out of the fight successful. I saw Yudhisthira clad in white silk swallowing the earth. He and his brothers ascended a palace of 1,000 pillars. You were there also, O Madhav, by Arjuna's side. On the other hand, the Kauravas and all their followers, wearing blood-colored robes, were going south toward Yamaraj's abode. I and countless other warriors will soon enter the Gandiva fire. I know it for certain." Krishna looked sadly at Karna. "This will surely come to pass, Karna, since you do not seem prepared to accept my advice. When destruction is at hand, my dear friend, wrong appears as right and remains in the heart. What more can I say?" Karna bowed his head slightly. "If somehow I survive the battle, I will see you again, O Krishna. Otherwise, we will meet in heaven. It now seems to me that I will see you only there, O sinless one." Krishna had Daruka pull up his chariot. He embraced Karna, who then jumped down and mounted his own chariot. Krishna, joined again by Satyaki, urged on his charioteer and sped away. Karna headed sorrowfully back to Hastinapur. Soon he would have to wage war against his own brothers, and against Krishna, who was clearly his well-wisher, even if his advice was hard to follow. Thinking still of Kunti's words and of his conversation with Krishna, Karna's mind felt heavy. It seemed he was not destined to enjoy happiness and prosperity in this life. Soon after Krishna left Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra decided to call one last council to discuss strategy. War was now unavoidable, but the blind king was anxious. Having seen Krishna's universal form, he was filled with apprehension. Surely no human could contend with such power. Perhaps there was still a possibility to make a last-minute agreement. The king looked at his counselors. O learned men, we have all heard Krishna's speech, and we have seen his superhuman power. The Lord of all the worlds will now ride into battle with the Pandavas, whom we have made our enemies. My son has insulted them, and now he has left us in anger. Surely we must face the greatest danger. Tell me what can be done to avert disaster. Bhishma shook his head. Our fate is sealed, O king. We have abused Keshava, who is worthy even of the gods' worship. There is no more fortune for us. We will have to take up arms in a contest that will divest the earth of innumerable heroes. What need is there for further discussion? It only remains for us to make arrangements for the war. Drona and Kripa agreed with Bhishma, and Duryodhan smiled. The moment he had been waiting for was near. Now there would be no more moralizing and useless talk. It should have been obvious to everyone from the start that the only way to deal with the Pandavas was on the battlefield. Krishna had shown supernatural power. So what? He was not even going to fight. In any event, there were many heroes on the Kaurava side who were masters of mystical weapons. He was not afraid. Vidura saw Duryodhan smirk and felt unable to constrain himself. He leapt to his feet and glared at the prince. He could not forgive him for insulting Krishna. You must now return Yudhisthira's legitimate share of the kingdom. Yudhisthira has no enemies, and he has been more than forbearing. He is waiting with his younger brothers, among whom is the revengeful Bhima, breathing like a snake. Surely you must be afraid of him. Duryodhan looked angrily at his uncle. Vidura continued, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Lord, has accepted Kunti's sons as his kinsmen. He lives in Dwarka with the Yadu kings and princes, who have conquered unlimited rulers. He is their lord. Surely you fear him. Vidura turned to the king. O ruler of the earth, by your inaction you are supporting offense personified, Duryodhan, as your cherished son. But he is envious of Krishna. Because of this you are devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible by punishing him, and thus do your whole family good. Otherwise we are all doomed. Duryodhan could take no more. From his childhood he had seen his uncle favor the Pandavas. It seemed he had no affection for him and his brothers. Now he had gone too far. Duryodhan leapt up, his body swelling with rage and his lips trembling. Who asked him to come here, this son of a maidservant? The deceitful Katwa is no friend of the Kurus. He is so crooked that he works secretly in the interest of the enemy, plotting against those who have supported him. Toss him out of the palace and leave him with only his breath. Dhritarashtra was shocked at his son's outburst. He raised a hand to silence him, but Vidura smiled and rose to his feet. Without saying anything, he lifted his bow, which he had never drawn in anger, and walked toward the door. He had been wondering how he would avoid having to fight against the Pandavas. Here was his opportunity. Leaning his bow against the door to signify that he would not fight for the Kurus, he walked out of the hall and headed toward the city's northern gate and the Rishi's ashrams. His mind was fixed on holy pilgrimage. The other Kuru elders censured Duryodhan, who merely laughed. Dhritarashtra then ended the assembly. It was time to prepare for war. When Krishna returned to Virata, Yudhisthira and his brothers greeted him warmly. Krishna then described everything that had transpired in Hastinapur, except for the private discussion with Karna. Krishna knew that if Yudhisthira were informed of Karna's actual identity, he would not fight with him. It had to remain a secret for the time being. The Pandavas were not surprised at the description of Duryodhan's refusal to accept good advice. They were not even surprised to hear how he had repeatedly stormed out of the court like an angry child. Sitting amid the Pandavas and surrounded by other monarchs, Krishna said, "I employed every means of diplomacy, from conciliation to creation of disunion. I told them that you would abandon pride and become Dhritarashtra's servants if the Kurus made peace with you. They could keep the kingdom and give you but 5 villages. When they still refused, I resorted to threats and displaying my superhuman powers. I tried to frighten Duryodhan, but he remained fixed in his foolishness. He would not offer you any part of the kingdom. Therefore, there is only the 4th means of diplomacy left. You must punish them. That is all they will understand. You will not regain your kingdom without war, O great heroes." Already, Duryodhan's forces are making their way to Kurukshetra, for they have selected that place for the battle. The kings will all be massacred. They are all within the pale of death. Yudhisthira was grave. He looked around at his brothers and the assembled kings. "O heroes, you have heard Krishna's words. All that is left is for us to prepare our armies for war. The time has come to select a general to command our forces. We already have made 7 warriors leaders of our divisions. Drupada, Virata, Justadumna, Sikandi, Satyaki, Chekitana, and Bhimasen. Which of these should take overall command? Sahadev, what is your opinion?" Yudhisthira looked at his younger brother. As was the custom, he wanted to hear individual opinions, starting with the youngest and ending with the eldest among them. Sahadev replied, "I think we should select Virata. He is bound to us by family ties. He is a ruler endowed with prowess and conversant with virtue. The mighty Matsya king is difficult to vanquish in battle. We have long depended on him and can do so again in the upcoming battle." Yudhisthira turned toward Nakula, who said, "That one who in maturity, knowledge of scripture, patience, nobility of birth, and respectability is the best of all. He who is ever devoted to truth, who has learned the science of weapons from Bharjvaj, who challenges Drona, and who has performed austerities to bring about his destruction. That monarch who stands surrounded by his sons and grandsons like a tree with 100 branches, the mighty Drupada, should stand at the head of our army." Then it was Arjuna's turn. His voice rang out, "He who by virtue of his austerities and his gratification of the rishis came out of the blazing fire armed with weapons and adorned with golden armor, he who himself resembled the fire and who then ascended a celestial chariot and went about roaring like a cloud, he who possesses the strength of lions and is capable of slaying a lion because he has the heart, chest, and shoulders of a lion, he who shines like the sun and is beautiful to behold, he who speaks the truth and has controlled his senses, he who was born for Drona's death, Justadumna should lead our forces. No one can pierce him with weapons, and he will be able to withstand Bhishma, whose arrows fall like thunderbolts or like Yamaraj's messengers. I do not see another who can stand against Bhishma except Justadumna. Therefore, let him be our commander." Bhima said, "We should be led by Sikandi. He was born for Bhishma's destruction, as the rishis have told us. When he stands ready for battle, displaying his celestial missiles, he resembles the great Parasurama. In my view, the man has not been born who can overcome him when he mounts his chariot. Clad in mail and lifting his weapons, only he will be able to slay Bhishma." Having heard from all his brothers, Yudhisthira said, Keshava alone knows the truth and untruth of all things, and their strength, weakness, and other inherent qualities. He whom Krishna, Lord of the Dasara race, names will be our commander and no other. Krishna is the root of our victory or defeat. On him depend our lives, kingdom, success, happiness, and misery. My dear brothers, Keshava is the Lord and ordainer of all things. Let him speak, and let us abide by his decision. It is almost night. When he has named our commander, let us rest. In the morning, after worshipping our weapons and the Brahmins, we will march to Kurukshetra. Krishna said, any of the heroes named are capable of leading our army. All of them are competent and can inspire fear even in Indra, what to speak of Dhritarashtra's sons. Although weak due to their sinfulness, Duryodhan and his brothers consider themselves strong. Duryodhan's attitude will change when he sees the mood of Arjuna, Bhima, and the twins. When Abhimanyu and Draupadi's sons, along with Drupada, Virata, and all the other chiefs come out for battle, Duryodhan and his brothers will repent their folly. I have endeavored to secure peace, and thus we have paid our debt to virtue. We cannot be blamed for what is about to happen. It is time for war. As far as leading our army is concerned, I agree with Dhananjaya. Let the mighty Drishtadyumna become the general. When Krishna finished speaking, the assembled kings and kshatriyas shouted their agreement. They were enlivened at the prospect of a fight. None of them hesitated to accept Krishna's choice of a general. Then they all retired for the night. The next day they would march toward Kurukshetra, a journey of 6 or 7 days. As the sun rose over Virata, the air was filled with the clamor of men and animals. Warriors rushed about in all directions, and shouts of "Yoke up! Load the weapons!" were heard everywhere. Numerous conches were sounded, firing the men with enthusiasm, and Brahmins chanted auspicious hymns to invoke good fortune for the army. Elephants trumpeted and chariot wheels rattled. Drummers beat drums as the huge army began the trek to Kurukshetra. In front of the army marched Bhima and Madri's two sons, clad in shining mail. Behind them came Drishtadyumna, surrounded by Draupadi's sons and Abhimanyu. The soldiers were cheerful, and they shouted with joy. Yudhisthira rode in their midst. He was mounted on a golden chariot and dressed in golden armor. He held his great spear. By his side rode Arjuna, with Krishna as his charioteer. On numerous chariots around Yudhisthira, his treasury was carried, along with the servants and attendants of the army. Behind the army came a long line of supply chariots, holding provisions, spare weapons, and other goods. Thousands of physicians and surgeons were also in attendance. As the army traveled, the Pandavas arranged for charity to be distributed to Brahmins along the way. They passed near many villages and colonies, but they carefully avoided temples and hermitages, so as not to defile any holy places and thus bring misfortune upon the army. Brahmins continuously recited Vedic mantras along the length of the procession of millions of men. Stopping each night at sunset and camping wherever they were, they went by slow marches. On the sixth night they reached Kurukshetra, where they camped around Lake Hiranvati. In the center of the encampment, servants erected a large tent for the Pandavas. This tent would also serve as the battle headquarters. Surrounding it, Krishna, Drishtadyumna, Drupada, Virata, and other army chiefs had tents erected. The provisions were also placed in well-guarded tents near the center. The armor, weapons, and chariot parts placed in piles resembled large hills, as did heaps of grains, ghee, honey, and other foodstuffs. Many thousands of elephants had been assembled, looking like moving mountains and wearing coats of steel covered with spikes. There were also fighting machines of all types, which are capable of throwing rocks, iron pellets, burning oil, lances, and red-hot iron shot. After conferring with Krishna Justadumna, and his own brothers, Yudhisthira had the army settle to await the commencement of the battle. Some miles away they could hear the Kaurava forces rumbling like thunder in the distance. All that was required now was a meeting between the leaders of both armies to agree on a day for the fighting to begin. When Krishna had left for Hastinapur, Duryodhan went to his counselors and said, "Having thwarted our attempts to capture him, Krishna has gone back to the Pandavas. Without doubt, he will be angry with us and will incite the Pandavas to fight with their full power. There will be a battle which will make our hair stand on end. We should not lose time in arranging our forces. Have them proceed at once to Kurukshetra. Let the road between here and there be leveled and cleared. We ourselves should prepare to depart." The ministers, headed by Karna, Shakuni, and Dushasan, got up from their seats and put on their fine headdress. Happy at the prospect of a battle, they slapped their arms and laughed. They brought out their weapons and had them loaded onto the chariots. The entire city of Hastinapur was filled with the commotion of men preparing for battle. The city resembled an ocean with cars, elephants, and horses for its waves, and the gleaming weapons for its foam. Drum beats and conch blasts were the ocean's roar, and the city's palaces were like mountains along its shore. Duryodhan rejoiced at the sights and sounds coming from his army. He personally oversaw the loading of weapons onto thousands of chariots. As well as bows, arrows, axes, spears, clubs, maces, and spiked bludgeons, there were massive pots of molasses and sand, which would be heated and then hurled at the enemy. There were large baskets full of poisonous snakes. Devices for throwing every kind of missile were loaded by the thousands. Chariots were filled with bullets, bombs, and other explosive weapons. The sight of all the weapons and missiles cheered the heroes and frightened the weak-hearted. The warriors gathered, wearing glittering robes embroidered with gold and adorned with gems. Powerful men clad in mail and masters in the use of weapons were appointed charioteers for more powerful fighters. The chariots were equipped with every kind of weapon, as well as drugs and herbs for curing wounds. Each chariot was drawn by four horses, with bells and pearls strung around their necks. Tall standards had flags attached to them, and on the chariot turrets were ornaments, shields and swords, their blades pointing outwards. They looked like moving fortresses and were difficult to approach. The great war elephants were decked in armor, decorated with jewels and wreaths of pearls. Seven men rode on the back of each. Two who were expert bowmen, two swordsmen, two bearing hooks, and one armed with lance and trident. The elephants rocked as they moved. Following them were thousands of horsemen, clad in mail and ornaments, and holding up flags. The horses were the best of their species, all under full control and free from the habit of scratching the ground with their forefeet. Behind the horsemen came even more infantry, their polished armor shining in the sunlight. For every chariot there were 10 elephants, for every elephant 10 horsemen, and for every horseman 10 foot soldiers. As Duryodhan presided over his 11 Akshahinis, each containing over 20,000 elephants, his heart swelled with pride. Seeing the endless procession of men, he wondered how the Pandavas would be able to even look at them. He selected first-class warriors to lead each subdivision. As the leaders of the Akshahinis, he appointed Kripa, Drona, Shalya, Jayadrath, Sudakshina, Kamboja, Kritavarma, Ashvatthama, Burishravas, Shakuni, and Balika. When all the arrangements were underway, Duryodhan approached Bhishma and asked humbly, "Without a commander-in-chief, even a large army is broken in battle like a swarm of ants. Division leaders seldom agree and are usually jealous of one another. You surely know the story of how the Kshatriyas of the Haihaya race, although they were very few, were able to defeat in battle the Brahmins united with the Vaishyas and Sudras. When the Brahmins asked the Kshatriyas why they were successful, they replied, In battle, we listen to the commands of only the wisest person, but you were separated and followed your individual whims. When they heard this, the Brahmins selected a suitable leader and were victorious over the Kshatriyas. We too need a leader. O Grandfather, you are equal to Shukra himself. You always wish me well and always follow the path of righteousness. Therefore become my general. To the Kurus, you are like the sun among the luminous bodies, Kuvera among the Yakshas, and Indra among the gods, Meru among mountains, and Garuda among birds. If you protect us, not even the gods in heaven can assail us. March at the front, like Kartikeya leading the celestials, and we will follow you like calves following a cow. The noble Bhishma looked down at Duryodhan, who stood with his hands clasped tightly. It may be as you say, O ruler of men, but as you are to me, so are the Pandavas. It is equally my duty to look after them. Still, I will fight on your behalf, as I have promised. Bhishma remembered long ago a vow he had made to his father to always protect the king in Hastinapur, even though he himself would never be monarch. How could he have known it would come to this? Thus, when Duryodhan had approached him some months ago to secure his assistance in the war, he had felt obliged to agree. Looking across to the great throne in the hall, where his own father had once sat, Bhishma continued, I do not see the warrior who can match my strength, except Arjuna. He is possessed of wisdom, and he knows the mantras for all the celestial weapons. But he will not encounter me in an open fight. I can quickly strip this world of men, gods, and asuras by the strength of my weapons. I will slay 10,000 warriors a day. However, O king, I will not slay any of the Pandavas. Bhishma added, There is one other condition to my accepting leadership of the army. Either Karna fights or I fight. The Suta's son and I cannot fight together. Karna retorted, I have already vowed that I will not fight while you are fighting. When you have been slain, O son of Ganga, then I will fight with the wielder of the Gandiva bow. Duryodhan gathered Brahmins and had them perform the rituals to install Bhishma as commander-in-chief. Hundreds of drums and conches were sounded as his head was anointed with sacred water. The assembled warriors roared in delight. With Bhishma as commander, who could defeat them? He was capable of annihilating armies single-handedly, and he could not be killed unless he chose to die. Outside the hall, however, frightful omens were seen as Bhishma was installed. Showers of blood fell from the sky and the earth shook. Fierce whirlwinds blew, and trees toppled to the ground. Incorporeal voices cried out. Meteors shot across the sky, and jackals howled. Afraid, Hastinapur's citizens made offerings to the gods. Bhishma came out of the hall looking like the full moon. Worshipped by Brahmins, he mounted his chariot and set off for Kurukshetra at the head of a large division of soldiers. The Kuru army encamped on the western side of Kurukshetra. They resembled a vast sea, the soldiers in flashing armor looking like water sparkling in the sunlight. Warriors roared, and conch blasts continuously sounded. At last the time for which a Kshatriya always longs had arrived. They would either be victorious in battle or die and attain the heavens.